is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhibi in Washington. And coming up on Africa News Tonight, Sudan's top generals and former civilian leaders are locked in tense negotiations. And old schools in 13 African countries will soon be connected to the internet. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Nine groups who say they are fighting against Ethiopia's government announced they would sign an agreement in Washington today on joining forces. But Ethiopian Attorney General Gideon Timotheos dismissed the alliance as a publicity stunt, saying it does not have a support base on the ground. The alliance includes the Oromo Liberation Army, OLA, and the Tigray People's Liberation Front, TPLF, which has been locked in a year-long war against Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's government. The announcement comes amid a war of rhetoric. The rebel forces have claimed recent gains and said they were prepared to take the capital in months, if not weeks. Abiy's government has dismissed the rebel claims, saying yesterday that the TPLF was encircled and close to defeat, while also urging Ethiopians to unite and join the fight. In the middle are hundreds of thousands of people who have been forced from their homes by the conflict. Aid agencies have warned of massive starvation, saying they cannot get food for the needy. The Defense Ministry today urged veterans to re-enlist in the armed forces to safeguard the country from a conspiracy to disintegrate it. The government has approved a six-month state of emergency and has told people to prepare to defend their neighborhoods. Diprose Mochena, the East Africa's director of Amnesty International, called the emergency measures a blueprint for escalating human rights violations, including arbitrary detention, particularly of human rights defenders, journalists, minorities, and government critics. Meta, the parent company of Facebook, said Wednesday it has deleted a post by Prime Minister Abiy that urged Ethiopians to bury the rebels for violating its policies against inciting and supporting violence. Sudan's top generals and former civilian leaders are locked in tense negotiations for a way out of the crisis sparked by a military takeover last week. According to the Associated Press, top general Abdel Fattah Burhan yesterday ordered for the release of four detained ministers. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, US Secretary of State Antony Blinken, and other officials have called for the immediate restoration of Sudan's civilian-led government as the international community presses for de-escalation that can put the country back on the path to democracy. The UN Human Rights Council is set to hold an emergency session on the situation today. Meanwhile, protest leaders and rights workers are warning of a widespread arrest campaign against activists and opposition leaders. Wire reports indicate the state's new television headquarters has been raided by the military, and mobile and internet communications across the country have been cut off. Old schools in 13 African countries will soon be connected to the internet, enabling millions of children to have access to digital learning content. That's what telecommunications and money service company Airtel Africa is promising. It's entered into a partnership with the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, to help bridge the digital divide. Reporter Vicky Stark has more.
UNICEF's regional manager for public and private partnerships in Eastern and Southern Africa, Isabel Burchard, says before the COVID-19 pandemic, there was already a learning crisis across the continent.
But with the pandemic, this became really a learning catastrophe, with millions of children losing out on basic reading, writing, and math skills. And this required a shift in our thinking and approaches and led to the Reimagine Education campaign, calling for world-class digital learning solutions that aim to provide connectivity, devices. And that's where the partnership with Airtel Africa comes in as the first Pan-African partner coming in with a multi-million dollar commitment.
She says Airtel Africa has committed financial and in-kind contributions of $57 million over 5 years. This will enable free access to online education content.
UNICEF is working in partnership with governments, academia, and curriculum experts on the online learning material. And many national platforms are already up and running, and we're further fine-tuning them to the needs of the students.
Airtel Africa's CEO, Segun Ogunsanya, says his company believes in making a difference in people's lives, and they found a strong partner in UNICEF.
Yes, Airtel Africa PLC is a leading provider of mobile communication services. We also provide mobile money services. We are serving over 120 million customers, and we listed on the London Stock Exchange. We also listed on the Nigerian Stock Exchange, turnover in excess of $4 billion, and our main purpose is to transform lives.
He says statistics show that a large number of Africans still do not have access to the internet.
A recent study by GSMA, which is the umbrella organization of mobile phone companies in most parts of the world, shows that in Africa, sub-Saharan Africa I'm talking about 19% of Africans don't have access to mobile broadband. 19%, that's almost one-fifth of Africans live in areas where there's no mobile broadband. Let's put that aside. We also have those who have the access, but they can't use the internet. Why are they unable to use? One, they cannot afford the charges, or they can't afford to buy the device. Two, they lack the basic education required to use the digital device. Some are just not literate.
He says through this project, they will primarily be connecting schools to the internet.
If it is required, we're going to be providing mobile devices for the children to access. It doesn't have to be a computer. It could be a computer. It could be a mobile device, whatever is required.
Ogunsanya says internet access is essential for the economic and social well-being of Africa and Africans.
I mean, personally, I believe access to internet is a fundamental human right. No one should be denied access to internet to this world. Look at what happened last year with COVID. It shows how important access to the internet is. So basically, it's like having access to shelter, having access to food. That's what internet is now.
The 13 countries that are expected to benefit from this partnership with Airtel Africa are Chad, Congo, Democratic Republic of the Congo, Gabon, Kenya, Madagascar, Malawi, Niger, Nigeria, Rwanda, Tanzania, Uganda, and Zambia. Ogunsanya says a recent study by the International Telecommunications Union shows that for every 10% increase in mobile broadband penetration, the increase in gross domestic product is 2% in low-income countries. That's welcome news to countries whose economies have declined and suffered mounting unemployment under the stress of the COVID pandemic. This is Vicky Stark for VOA News in Cape Town.
An attack in Niger's tri-border zone with Burkina Faso and Mali left at least 69 people dead, including a local mayor. The attack occurred Tuesday, but was only confirmed by the government yesterday. According to the French news agency AFP, the mayor of the commune of Banibangu was traveling with a delegation that was ambushed by unidentified armed bandits. A search is underway for the attackers. The government has declared 2 days of national mourning starting today. Police and other security agencies have rescued six staffers and their children who were abducted at the University of Abuja by unidentified gunmen Tuesday. Details of the rescue operation were sketchy, but the Abuja Police Command spokesperson confirmed that the hostages have been freed. Munachi Chuks from Abuja, Nigeria, spoke with the university's spokesperson.
There is relief but apprehension within the university community in the Nigerian capital city of Abuja following the release of those who were abducted in the early hours of Tuesday. University spokesperson Dr. Habib Yakub was elated.
Well, it's the good news, actually, that our staff that were abducted on Tuesday this week have been released. And I need to tell you and emphasize that there was no ransom that was paid.
Yakub credited the efforts of the security forces for making the rescue possible.
The combined forces of the police, the military, the DSS, and also our safety officers who have been working round the clock ensured that the abducted staff of the University of Abuja were rescued unconditionally.
In a statement this morning, the management of the university restated its commitment to provide adequate security to the university community and prevent a repeat of the ugly incident. For VOA News, Munachi Chooks.
Local government elections have left a big headache for South Africa's political parties. A record 66 municipalities have no outright winner, forcing big parties to negotiate with their smaller opponents for coalitions. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
The results from Monday's voting have been announced, but the battle to get the mandate to rule in the 66 municipalities has just begun. The ruling African National Congress' poor performance at the polls left it with only 166 municipalities under its control. Now, the party that has been in power since the end of apartheid in 1994 has two choices: occupy the opposition benches in 89 municipalities or take its backing power to smaller parties in the 66 hung municipalities. ANC leader and President Cyril Ramaphosa said the people have spoken and parties must listen.
If we are to make this a new and better era, we as leaders must put aside our differences and work together in a spirit of partnership and common purpose. The manner in which our people spoke should be indicative of their will and wish to have us as leaders working together.
The Democratic Alliance, DA party, finished second with 13 councils under its belt, while the Inkatha Freedom Party stands at number 3 in charge of 10 municipalities. DA leader John Steenhuisen told the reporters that his party is already hard at work to get its fair share of power in the hung municipalities.
And hopefully we'll, by the end of the weekend, we'll be able to start making announcements around where we have been able to form stable coalitions with a focus on the best interests of the people in those particular municipalities, but also in the long-term interest of those municipalities in terms of stability and delivery.
While the radical economic freedom fighters did not win full control in any municipality, it ranked third in overall votes in all major municipalities. This has positioned the party as a key kingmaker in the hung municipalities. However, party leader Julius Malema told reporters that those who want his party's hand in political marriage should be ready for many sacrifices.
Parties that approach us must know that the first item on the agenda before sharing of positions will be the commitment to the people. Anyone who comes to the EFF must come with a clear agenda of land redistribution, water provision, jobs, sanitation and care of disabled people.
Analysts say the low voter turnout is the main cause for the long list of hung municipalities, which includes Johannesburg, South Africa's commercial hub. Of the 26 million registered voters, only 12.3 million people voted. Experts see this as a protest from those who no longer have faith in political leadership due to corruption and poor service delivery. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Botswana this week recorded zero COVID-19 deaths for the first time this year. The country has seen a drastic drop in cases despite easing restrictions to open up the economy, including nightlife. From Habrone, Botswana, reporter Mokandisi Dube has the details.
In his weekly update, COVID-19 Task Force Deputy Coordinator Musipili Musipili said yesterday that Botswana did not record any deaths related to the pandemic this week.
Thus far, there's an estimated 188,000 recoveries and the number of COVID-19-associated fatalities stand at 2,407, unchanged from the last reporting period. In terms of disease distribution across the country, the Gaborone area remains white, and it has been for a long time. The rest of the country in the north and in the west remains green, which is comforting.
But Musipili warned some cases could be reported late, as active cases remain high at 2,528.
In those days, there were 50 new recorded cases, but that does not mean that that's all the disease that is out there, because there are some cases that accumulate as a result of sometimes late reporting, which adds to the number of active cases.
The decline in reported cases coincides with Botswana ramping up its vaccination program. Of the estimated 1.6 million adult population, at least 21% are fully vaccinated. Musipili says more than 1 million people have at least received the first jab.
In terms of the vaccination program, it's an estimated 324,733 citizens and residents who have completed their vaccination, and another 744,518 that has received their first dose and are waiting to complete, which brings the total of about nearly a million people in this country who have received at least one jab or more of a COVID-19 vaccine.
Botswana lifted strict COVID-19 restrictions at the end of September and decided not to extend an 18-month state of emergency. President Mokgweetsi Masisi said the move was meant to open up the economy, which included unrestricted travel within the country and allowing night spots to operate. For VOA, this is Mkondisi Dube in Gaborone, Botswana.
Environmentalists in Zimbabwe are reaching angrily to President Emmerson Mnangagwa's address at the COP26 conference, where he pledged his government's fight against deforestation and climate change. Columbus Mavunga reports from Zimbabwe's capital, where environmentalists say the government is busy dishing out land to companies, mainly Chinese, to mine coal for energy use, which COP26 once phased out.
Tuesday in Scotland, President Emmerson Mnangagwa addressed the 2021 United Nations Climate Change Conference, known as COP26, where he urged developed countries to pay for causing global warming by emitting gases into the air. He said developing nations like Zimbabwe were paying for the consequences of those emissions. He also pledged his country's cooperation in the fight against climate change.
Zimbabwe has revised its nationally determined contributions and committed to a conditional 40% per capita greenhouse gas emission reduction target by 2030. Comprehensive strategies are also being implemented towards mainstreaming climate change adaptation and resilience across all sectors of our economy.
This comes at a time when environmentalists in Zimbabwe are asking the government to revoke an exploration license recently awarded to a Chinese company to mine coal for energy use. The Center for Natural Resource Governance is one of the organizations opposing the license. The group promotes green energy and fears that exploration for coal will cause greater deforestation. Henry Yapokoto, the program manager for the group, said Mnangagwa's comments run contrary to what he sees on the ground.
But the government has been in overdrive mode to promote mining everywhere in order to reach a 12 billion mining economy. In fact, it won't make ecological sense for Zimbabwe to attain a 12 billion economy based on bad models of production, bad consumption. That leaves a huge ecological footprint or a legacy of an ecological disaster. We all understand that mining comes with the destruction of forests that serve as carbon sinks and habitat for wildlife.
Nyapokoto added that Zimbabwe was exploring oil and gas on its northeast border with Zambia, another project that could lead to deforestation.
Despite the impact of oil and gas on global warming, there will be visible immediate and direct effects of this oil and gas mining on local communities or ecosystems. Land will be cleared for mining and other infrastructure that is going to support that mining. And this is contrary to the greening of the economy that they're talking about in Glasgow.
He said Zimbabwe was in the top 10 of countries of deforestation with about 300,000 hectares of forest destroyed annually. But Byron Zamasia of the Zimbabwe Environmental Law Association says Mnangagwa was genuine in his COP26 address about fighting deforestation caused by need for energy.
So the issue of fighting deforestation is a key ingredient for addressing greenhouse gas emissions for Zimbabwe. These trees, they act as carbon sinks, since they can absorb carbon dioxide, which is a major cause of global warming. What we may want to do as a country is to make available alternative sources of energy, especially for the rural communities who rely on wood fuel and account for the major part of our deforestation. We may also need to promote intensive farming methods as opposed to extensive farming methods that require bigger fields and the clearing of new forests for fields.
The Environmental Management Agency in Zimbabwe has been fining people caught cutting or burning forests, but so far that has not stopped the trees from coming down. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehias Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music from from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC right after.